Good afternoon, this is Erin Fitzpatrick at the Heritage Radio Network at The Root of It. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, and I want to thank our sponsor, Testa Wines, for today's show. We're going to start today's show with the Week in Wine recap, which is quite heavy on news from Italy this week. Chianti Classico producers will only be allowed to sell 80% of this year's production in an effort to stabilize the market. Members of the Chianti Classico Consortio have agreed to implement a blocco delle vendette, or stop of sale, because of fears that falling bulk prices could harm the image of Tuscan DOCG. Under the plans, they will hold back 20% of the wines produced from the 09 harvest for a minimum of 24 months. It's an experiment and a tentative attempt to avoid speculation after bulk prices from Chianti fell heavily during 2008 and early 2009. Italy make headlines again today with the new CMO, the Common Market Organization for European Wines, now in place. Italy's wine producers and growers associations have lost much of their power and instead have formed a new organization called Valor Italia. It will serve as Italy's new independent certifying body for wine, which has officially been recognized as a controlling third party by the Italian government. And sadly, Giuseppe Aname, a classic Suave producer from the Veneto, has died today. He's largely credited with cultivating the Foscarino vineyard and separating the finer vines from the not-so-viner wines of lesser quality to make good Suave and also to arise the reputation of Suave after it suffered quite poorly the past 10 years. So thank you for the contribution you made to Suave production. And lastly, just after we reported that Starbucks was to be selling wine and beer at its stores, beginning in Seattle, other fast food restaurants are adding wine to their menus to boost sales and their image. Burgerville, a 39-unit chain in the Pacific Northwest, recently put wine and beer on the drinks list, and Denver-based Chipotle Mexican Grill has added beer and margaritas to its drinks list as well. We have a great show today. Our guest will be Bill Bendelo, who I will introduce just after this short break. Joining us today at the Heritage Radio Network. This is At the Root of It. It was a little cut copy. Today's show will be brought to you by Testa Wines. And we have a guest today, Bill Bendelo. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Thanks. Great to be here.
Great. I wanted to bring Bill in to the studio today. He's working on a new venture called the Sloan Wine Group.
Mm-hmm.
So, could you tell a little bit about the Sloan Wine Group for our listeners?
Sure. We're part of the three-tier system. I guess we can explain that, but we're going to be a distributor mainly, which means that we get wine from wineries or through brokers or from importers, or in the case with us, we'll be importing some stuff directly. And then we're the ones that sell it directly to retail stores and licensed restaurants of any different size.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the people who get wine from the wineries or the importers abroad, warehouse it, and then handle all the shipping and then, of course, billing to all the people that consumers get it from, licensed retail stores or restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Great. It's a thorough explanation.
Yeah.
And what was the inspiration behind the group?
My partners and I worked for a great distribution company that we loved working for, the suppliers loved working with, and customers loved working with. And that all changed when that company was taken over by a much larger company. And I guess, you know, as with many, many similar situations, a lot of details and policies that we held near and dear that were important to our customers and to our suppliers in the grand scheme of a much larger company took a far back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came down to things like ordering enough wine, properly storing it, you know, keeping track of vintages and those kind of things, it became very difficult to walk into accounts and pretend that nothing had changed, because basically a lot of the things had changed that they had done business with us for.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily I'm in a position, and my partner's in a position where we can afford to take the risk, essentially. Luckily, at my old job, I had made some money. I'd put some away. I don't have children. I don't have a mortgage. So I've been dipping
into
my...
Time to take a chance.
Yeah, I've been dipping into my savings for the last few months while we're getting this thing off the ground. But it's,
sure.
I figure it's definitely the time to do it, because it's kind of like there's two converging things going on, where there's the typical consolidation in our business that's going on in so many. But the demand from the consumer end for a wider variety of products,
mm-hmm,
is very similar to what's going on in food today, where people are starting to become awakened to what they're putting in their bodies and where it comes from and who's behind it and why.
Right.
And more, it's always been the case in this market, but it's really starting to go across the whole country and around the world, where people don't want to just drink mass-produced stuff any more than they want to eat mass-produced,
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Wine is essentially a lot safer than, say, beef or chicken or things that could be sprayed with all kinds of... Well, there's plenty of things that are sprayed in vineyards, Lord knows, but they're starting to care about, you know, do they want to buy the same name brand over and over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, helps to pay for, you know, advertising budgets.
Right.
Or do they want to buy it from some farmer that works honestly? And I guess people are starting to give up on the idea that they have to drink a particular thing that's proper.
Right. Or that they've been told to drink for years,
yeah,
because they didn't know any different.
Yeah, and they, yeah, want to drink something different.
Mm-hmm. So we have a discerning consumer,
mm-hmm,
more discerning drinker, an educated wine drinker.
Mm-hmm.
So that was inspiration behind starting a boutique distribution importing company, where you were able to really seek out some producers and that weren't yet represented in the States?
Yeah, a lot of them. And a lot of them were with other companies that just weren't getting a real foothold. Like,
uh-huh,
they were with distributors that I've learned the names of distributors that I didn't know existed. And,
uh-huh,
I was thinking, okay, if I don't know they exist, then I don't know what customers might.
Right. Because
I've never seen anybody from their company out on the streets before. But,
mm-hmm,
you know, I guess there's, we'll be certainly trying to take every brand, every winery we have to, you know, another level. But a lot of them are new. But, and so, you know, some people have told me, well, how many brands can this market possibly bear?
Right.
And I think it's virtually limitless,
mm-hmm,
especially this market. But, you know, it's limited only by how much of it you sell, really. You know, I mean, if we take out samples and prove to people how good they are, you know, it ultimately is always going to come down to, you know, what they end up buying is their decision. So
yeah. So the Sloan Wine Group is an international portfolio?
Yeah. What we had a luxury of at our old beloved company.
Which we will not, for our listeners, I'm sorry, we will not be naming what this large BMF company is.
Yeah, but the small company that we worked for that we loved had a great portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the kind of company that you could walk into any restaurant or any retail store and have several things to sell them, not just a couple things.
Right.
I mean, you could. There were some restaurants that looked down upon that as if we were trying to please everybody. But, you know, some people have asked us, what are you going to specialize in?
Right.
And I always thought that as kind of being, you know, there are great wine importers, distributors that specialize in, say, Italian wine. There's, you know, a couple of importers that do nothing but Greek wine, and they do very well.
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought it as for a distributor that it's sort of pigeonholing, as in you're only going to be selling, if you're only bringing in Italian wine and you're distributing it, then you're going to be selling it mainly to a certain number of accounts.
Right.
So we wanted to have the idea. I mean, there's a lot of distributors, yes, but there's not nearly as many of distributors as there are retail stores. And you certainly have, if there's retail stores that want to be major players,
mm-hmm.
it's, you kind of do have to specialize in something at this point. You know, I could think of a few places that, you know, have come along, hasn't been that long that they've been around, and they specialize in, say, older bottles or organic wine or something like that. And, as a distributor, it seems like, I mean, of course, it's a huge game of playing the inventory properly. It's all about cash flow. So we figured if we're going to be successful in the near, medium, and long term and be stable,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't make sense for us, I don't think, to be snotty about, oh, I only want to sell these types. I mean, I have certainly some types of wine that I love a lot more than others, but I wouldn't want to make my whole living selling those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's,
so if someone from a retail store was brand new and they were looking to fill their shelves, for you, the idea is attractive that from your portfolio, mm-hmm. there would be representation from large and small and boutique and biodynamic from mm-hmm. across the world, which potentially could make up a wine list if it was an international wine list or a retail store selection that would be vast enough and interesting enough if they only wanted to use you, for instance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's definitely what we had at the old company, and certainly we're just starting out. We're going to be just starting to sell September 1st. So, you know, we
two-week countdown.
Yeah, we only have, there's only so much money we can possibly lay out at first for inventory, but that's definitely the goal. And what we have so far, I mean, we have wine from every major country other than, at this point, Germany, Austria, and South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd like to get some other wines, but we have, you know, wine from Slovenia. We
love Slovenia. I had one last night.
Yeah.
The Movia Pinot Nero 2003.
Cool.
Very nice. Yeah. Drinking very nice.
And we'll have, what we'll try to do is have a very diverse one. I mean, we'll have stuff that's, you know, very expensive, stuff that's very cheap. You know, we have stuff that says, you know, off the beat track as a Slovenian wine, and we have plenty of wine from, all the well-known regions like Napa and Bordeaux and what have you.
So in answer to the question that people are asking you with respect to what would define you or separate you from other, because there are a lot of, obviously a lot of distributors, a lot of wholesalers in this market. So it's saturated to a point, but how do you distinguish yourselves from the others? It's a
hard
question, I know.
Yeah, I mean, well, basically the thing that really, as far as our customers ultimately are concerned, is that we're who we are,
mm-hmm.
the individual people. And we have the people that we know, and they know us for the reasons that they know us, and they know us to be, you know, a resource for information and wines of these types.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's probably too early to say that, oh, we're going to be by far the best and we're going to crush the competition. But I would sound like the company that took over my old company. But I guess, I mean, what we'll try to do is mimic what we had at the old beloved small company, but, you know, have more attention to detail, we're going to be, I mean, the partners who own the company will be out in the street. So we won't lose, you know, we won't lose track of what's important, who's important, and where the market's going.
Yeah.
But
very customer service oriented.
Absolutely. That's the thing that really started to kill it and make me want to leave after the big takeover was when customers would be like, one of the things that I'm not sure all listeners would know is that in New York, there's laws that say you have to pay your bill by a certain time, 30 days, mm-hmm. or within 5 days after that, the vendor is obligated by law to report you to the state liquor authority, and then you get immediately put onto a COD basis with all vendors until that bill is cleared.
Right.
And of course,
the restaurant's worst nightmare.
Yeah, it's a great thing for our business for our distributors in this business, because it essentially means that you're going to get paid sooner or later. And
yeah.
There's always, of course, instances where people go to collections and sometimes bill don't get paid. But it helps immensely with cash flow. It prevents you from being strong-armed, like I'm sure goes on in other states. But, you know, certainly there's a lot of tact that you should use when you're going to put somebody else's business in that kind of position.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to be, you know, it went from a scenario where somebody would call from the accounting department or would send us an email to the salespeople, and we would be able to let them know, you know, okay, this is overdue. When can I come and get it? Or
right.
can you please take care of this? And after the big corporate takeover, it was just a flick of a switch, because they were dealing with so many accounts. It's just basically sheer numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They were dealing with...
But oftentimes aired. I mean, something...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was certainly like the prevailing attitude was, we don't possibly have the time or the manpower to care to let anybody know. We're just going to report them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, then clearing up that in that large of a bureaucracy took longer, and it was just, you know, a restaurant who's struggling in this or any economy, or even normally, is like, gets reported on a Thursday afternoon when they're trying to order all the things that they need for the weekend, and they find out your company reported them for a $200 invoice or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there was an oversight on their part, or the check was a day late or something. And it's just, you know, the fact that nobody could bother to call them. You know, there was ways that they had to try to get us that information, but the information was usually incomplete and inconsistent, and it was bad.
It was bad.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I'd start to come in to accounts with my tail between my legs and then walk out the same way. And it was like, I felt genuinely bad, because I was directly involved in this entity that was making their lives very difficult. And I thought totally unnecessarily. And certainly, you know, getting paid on time and following state laws are vital for any company.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, once that personal effort or complete lack of even willing to do that was gone, that's when I started to think, maybe I should really think about where I'm working and where else I can do this.
Right.
And I didn't want to make the, you know, lateral move, and my partners didn't want to make the lateral move of just going to another company and starting at the bottom of the totem pole.
Mm-hmm.
We figured, you know, if we're going to do this over again, we've done it before.
Yeah, we've done our time. Let's do it on our own.
Yeah, let's do our own, and let's do it with new... You know, there's such an appetite for new things in this market, and I think it's really, we're essentially, I mean, we'll be in competition against every wholesaler, but it's mainly us. It's probably us versus the larger ones, because there's a clique of smaller companies, and they seem to be very friendly with their competition. It's not like, oh, get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all in the same boat. We all coexist.
Well, I'd like to hear a little bit more, as I'm sure our listeners would, about some of the behind the scenes at the larger company, the extra large company, we'll say. A little juice on that. So we're going to take a quick break and be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to At the Root of It. It's a little helmet with Unsung. Good one from the past. My guest today is Bill Bendelow from the Sloan Wine Group, which will be launching September 1st here in New York. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very ready for that. We are going to just segue into this part of the show by picking up from where we left off. As you were mentioning, some of the challenges of working for an extra large company was that some of the smaller producers that were part of the book didn't necessarily get the attention, or they got a little bit forgotten, pushed aside by some of the larger wineries who would have made a faster turnaround, or that are taking up shelves at a retail store and moving through them very quickly, those wines.
Yeah.
So in this new portfolio that you're representing, do you have some smaller producer? Would you like to call it a boutique distributor? Or
yeah, it's certainly the size of us right now. I mean, our plans are to grow, but a lot of the wineries or producers that are coming to us are coming to us because they weren't getting, either they were just lost in a really big book, or they were with a distributor that was just not getting much done for them in the market. But we were surprised at how many wineries that were with very established companies that were calling us right away, because they just feel, I mean, of course, you always have the idea that some wineries have a different sense of how good they are, or how, you know, loved their wines are than maybe what you or the you think.
Yeah,
the
they're obviously biased. Yeah. So they're wondering, but wait, in New York, there's so many restaurants. How come our wines aren't moving faster?
Yeah, I mean, and there was some that, you know, they called us and said, well, we were surprised that they called us because we always liked the wines, and then they were telling us about how, you know, we're trapped in this portfolio and we're looking at double-digit losses every month, and this is definitely not just the economy.
We
see the POs, you know, the purchase orders are going way, way down. And there was one, you know, it's like, you know, some Pinot Noir from a well-known winery that was telling us how, you know, the distributor had ordered 7 cases. It's like, if you're the wholesaler in New York State, you know,
seven cases, that's what a retailer orders.
Yeah. So obviously they weren't anticipating much sales, and they certainly weren't prepared to turn that around. So there's been a few people that have come to us for that very reason, for sure.
Yeah.
And then some came to us just because they saw us as they knew who we were, where we had worked, what kind of experience in the market, and like what kind of customers we had dealt with. And they said, well, I've been waiting for a company like yours to come around, because my only other alternatives for, you know, the smaller you get, you know, a company, a very small winery could be with a wine distributor that most people think of as boutique. But for them, it would get lost even in a portfolio like that. Like somebody, like there's a winery that we're getting, you know, 30 cases of. Brookman is the guy that he's.
But do they do small production?
Yes. Yeah. Like he's making 500 cases, maybe 300 or 400 or 500 cases, and you know, he knows it's he's the winemaker for Grace Family, and it's his own project that he just likes to do on the side, and he wanted to wait until he thought was the right distributor to go with to start in New York.
So what are some of the other wineries that you are excited about from your portfolio getting behind?
Well, I guess domestically, Brookman is a great one. I mean, it's expensive and limited, but I can't wait to bring out samples of it.
Yeah.
Eric Dunham came to us through a friend of ours, a customer.
That's from
Columbia Valley, Washington.
West Coast,
I was just blown away at a lot of those wines.
Cabernet.
It's Cabernet, Syrah. There's some blends that he does. There's a very good Riesling that he does.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a group that came to us from a large distributor that is mainly one family that owns a lot of the Edna Valley acreage, and some of the people and some of the property that is left over, I guess you could say, not left over, but from the old Chalone wine group.
Sure.
Yeah.
Massive.
So like that old property that Dick Graff founded is making wine again, you know, not just under the proper Chalon label. But that group of wineries we're very excited about. There's plenty of good wine that they have for us to sell. You know, it's not a matter of, you know, being worried about running out. As far as imports go, that we're getting, one of our biggest partners is going to be the Artisan Collection. And we were introduced to him by a friend of ours, like, right away. And he's storing his national inventory in the same warehouse as we are. So it's going to be very easy logistically. He's got a great portfolio. I never realized how much organic Spanish wine there was until I looked at his portfolio. He's got a great sherry producer, Valdespino.
Oh, look out for that.
Yeah.
Love sherry.
Felix Callejo is probably going to be one of the better up-and-coming Ribera del Duero producers. He's got a really interesting winery. It's in a new DO that's going to be coming out in this, I can't remember the name of the park. It's a national park that's on the border with Portugal. It's kind of just west. It's just west of Ribera del Duero and south of Rueda. And one of the stipulations for being in this DO is that you'll have to be organic because it's all within the boundaries of this national
park. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. There's an Italian supplier that we have called the Intrepid Wine Company, and it's a few guys that would go to Italy and taste oddball varieties and wonder why they couldn't get them back in the States. Things like Asperino and Pellegrino and things like that. And what they would go to the producers, and the producers would say, oh, Americans aren't interested in this. It's not Pinot Grigio or Chianti or something like that. So they put together a label where they all look similar, so you can know what that they're all coming from the same guys, but they lists who exactly made it, how many bottles were produced, or how many were imported, or that kind of thing.
Cool. Our listeners, are you going to have on the back of each bottle that you distribute or import a Sloan Wine Group selection?
On the stuff that we import, yes.
On the stuff that you import, yeah.
Yeah.
So for to look out for that, then.
And then as more things come along, yeah, the Sloan Wine Group on the back, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
We don't have a website up and running yet, but it's Sloan Wine Group.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have one, I imagine, soon.
Yep.
Well, unfortunately, time is up this afternoon, but wanted to thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Excited about your new project and wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you.
And thank you again to our sponsor, Testa Wines, a family-owned business since 1862 and responsible for introducing some of the world's top wineries to the U.S. Also, thank you to our producer and engineer, Lorenzo Raggioneri and Nat Weiner. You guys are great. And we'll see you next week. It's At the Root of It every Tuesday at 4 p.m. at theheritageradionetwork.com. Thanks so much.